Hello and welcome to Hardcover Hoes, a long-distance book club where two book lovers express their feelings on their book of the moment via podcast. I am one half of your host, Sam Cabrera-Dixon, and today, this is actually Hardcover Ho. It's just me today. But normally, Sammy, Skorstad, and I usually comb through book talk, combined our to-be-read lists, and now we intend to make our way through them one book at a time. We'd love for you to come along with us and join the discussion. The book of the moment for today, I never read this part, this feels so strange, but the book of the moment for today's episode is actually two books. It is the Celestial Kingdoms duology. It is The Daughter of the Moon Goddess and the Heart of the Sun Warrior by Sue Lin Tan. I am having technical difficulties today, so I'm going to be actually reading the author bio from Truly, the back of the book. Sue Lin Tan writes stories inspired by the myths and legends she fell in love with as a child. Born in Malaysia, she studied in London and France before settling in Hong Kong with her family. When not writing or reading, she enjoys exploring the hills and reservoirs, the temples, beaches, and narrow, winding streets. She's also grateful to always be within reach of bubble tea and spicy food, which she unfortunately cannot cook, which is very funny to me. And the bubble tea part, very relatable. I love me a good bubble tea. So before I jump into discussing my thoughts and feelings regarding this duology, I'm going to go ahead and read through the blurb on the back of book one. Growing up on the moon, Xingyan is accustomed to solitude, unaware that she is being hidden from the feared celestial emperor who exiled her mother for stealing the elixir of immortality. But when Xingyan's magic flares and her existence is discovered, she is forced to flee her home, leaving her mother behind. Alone, powerless, and afraid, she makes her way to the Celestial Kingdom, a land of wonder and secrets. Disguising her identity, she seizes an opportunity to train alongside the Emperor's son, mastering archery and magic, even as passion flames between her and the prince. To save her mother, Xingyan embarks on a perilous quest, confronting legendary creatures and vicious enemies. However, when treachery looms and forbidden magic threatens the kingdom, she must challenge the ruthless celestial emperor for her dream, striking a dangerous bargain in which she is torn between losing all she loves and plunging the realm into chaos. Daughter of the Moon Goddess begins an enchanting romantic duology that weaves ancient Chinese mythology into a sweeping adventure of immortals and magic, of loss and sacrifice, where love vies with honor, dreams are fraught with betrayal, and hope emerges triumphant. First of all, that's one of the best blurbs I think I've read in a very long time. I'm gonna do some trigger warnings off the top of my head. There's a lot of war in these books. There is some unwanted, I wouldn't say sexual advances, but at least unwanted touching, unwanted manipulation for sure, backstabbing, death of a parent. If I think of more, it's very gory. If I think of more, I'll bring it up. Without any further ado, let's get into it. I read these because one of my friends really likes them. And they have some of the most gorgeous covers I have seen in any duology in a long time. I've also just been craving a duology. I feel like there's been so many, you know, beautifully, books with beautiful covers that look like a standalone, and then they've turned out to be like, haha, now you're getting sucked into a trilogy, now you're getting sucked into, you know, actually an 11-page series, and you thought it was just going to be one standalone. So it was really refreshing to just read a duology. Like, you knew it was going to be a duology, you're going into it knowing it's a duology, you know that there's going to be a resolve at the end of two books. That was really satisfying. I feel like I haven't had a nice duology like that in a long time, especially a high fantasy duology such as this, that really checks a lot of boxes for me. I can't remember if I actually said that I'll be spoiling, talking about the whole book and all of its glory, which of course includes revealing the ending. But I will be. So, it took me a couple weeks to finish these, I feel. I think one of the reasons is because obviously Sammy's not here for this episode. I was trying to find someone to guest with me for this week's episode, but I could not in time, so I decided, you know what? Why not just do a little solo episode and talk to myself as if I don't do that all the time. Anyways, so I kind of had like less of a time restraint for this because I could record it whenever I was had a little bit of free time to do so. So I really took my time, I feel, with the first book. Obviously there's world building, there's learning the names of a billion people, and there's trying to make sense of a new magic system and all the factors that go into starting and reading any fantasy book that you're just jumping into for the first time. So I was like, okay, we are on the moon. We're starting on the moon. Jingyin is, living there with her mom and Pingha, and you're kind of like, okay, so she lights the moon. The moon, okay, she's the moon goddess. We got you. And I really liked how we saw from such a young age, right? Jingyin is very capable. And when we move through and we see, Pingha tries to take her away because they feel like the celestial emperor and empress have some kind of idea that there is someone else being hidden up there. And you're like, okay, her mom is not actually like there on her own free will. It's an imprisonment kind of thing. It's very interesting to be like, what is going on? So early on, I really liked the way that this book started because it kind of throws you into, okay, here's a little bit of context. And then immediately Jingyin is thrown down to where the immortals live in the celestial kingdom, and she's a maid and she's going through all these like struggles that she's never experienced before. And of course that's how she meets Li Wei. And I too love a charming little prince, okay, especially in these kinds of fantasy novels. And he's so charming and he's so sweet. I think had Sammy read these, she would definitely probably have not been Team Li Wei. I was Team Li Wei until I realized there was another team to potentially be on, which of course is Team Wenxi. I am so weak for the brooding, meanie kind of guy, I guess, in these books. As is always, I like them when they're a little, they're just they're Li Wei was too polished. Li Wei was too perfect. He was he's the golden boy. And although, to his parents, who he defies a lot through both books, but he's like the golden boy. He's so sweet. He's so kind. He would do anything for Jingyin. And I think it was too, I don't know, it was a little too, he's too nice for me, perhaps. And perhaps had there not been another love interest involved, I would have loved Li Wei with my whole heart and soul the whole way through the whole duology. However, he has to say yes to his engagement. And I understand, like, I know that Jingyin took that really personally, but I mean, it was kind of like what did you think was going to happen, at least from my perspective, because yeah, he has a duty to uphold. So I didn't hold that Li Wei agreeing to marry Princess something, I don't remember what her name was. I didn't hold that against him because I kind of understood it. I do, of course, understand where Jingyin was coming from with her emotions, which yeah, that fucking sucked. But it does open it up for us to meet Wenxi, and let me tell you, the relief I felt upon meeting him was like, okay, because I was gonna like the story regardless, even if it was going to be perfect pretty boy Li Wei throughout. Correct. But man, I do. Maybe it's the like I read Twilight and books like that too early on. I love a love triangle, man. There's something about two, both maybe not equally as amazing guys, but amazing in their own ways, guys vying for the heart of one girl who doesn't even necessarily feel like she doesn't need someone to complete her. Jingyan doesn't need anybody but herself. But one of the things she learns throughout the two books is like the value that love has. Love is not this burden that only causes pain, which is what a lot of the other characters and enemies throughout the books are kind of trying to say. So I loved that we got like this little bit of tension. We get to watch Jingyan like come into herself, obviously, and then also learn that, with all of the things that are changing within herself, her new ways of magic that she's learning, and when she finds the Jade Dragon Bow with Wenxia at that one after killing that one monster, you're seeing there's a lot more there. We know like little bits and pieces of her parents' story. But one of the other things I think is a common theme throughout these books is like the idea of course, when stories are told, these people sound very particular, right? And so, the Celestial Emperor and Empress are pissed off because Jingyan's dad was the sun warrior or whatever, and he killed the sunbirds. And so you're getting these like little parent lore pieces throughout the book, where you're kind of like, okay, this dragon bow, the Jade Dragon Dragon Jade Dragon Bow must have something to do with her dad. Like, this is not at all a coincidence. And Wenxia knows that as well. Which at the time we don't know that Wenxia is going to betray us and betray everyone, which of course was upsetting. I didn't want that to happen. I also didn't really see it coming. Obviously, like when the princess that Li Wei was engaged to is like kidnapped, and Jingyan goes to rescue her and Li Wei, and she sees an archer who's like masked, but she can see his gray eyes. And I was like, oh shit. At first, I was like, is it her dad? And he's alive. But then it was like, nope, it was just Wenxia. And he was trying to let her escape and things of the sort. I thought it was a really good first book. Like, The Daughter of the Moon Goddess is a very good first book, especially in a duology. It gave everything in a way that was really palatable. It wasn't like too much world building. There's some books that I've read in the past, fantasy wise, which just like reading the world building first, like 200 pages is just too much. This was not too much at all. I think it was constantly intriguing. I think I was pretty invested, and there wasn't a lot of like, here is this magic system that makes zero sense, right? It was very, I don't know what I'm saying, right? You can agree with me, listener. But it was very much a very well-rounded introduction to the story, and you do get bits and pieces that are going to come into play in the second book, right? After when she betrays Xingyan, I was so sad. I was also angry, and so I was like, okay, I guess I'm Team Li Wei by default, because of course when she had to become an asshole, and we didn't want any of this to happen, so of course it will happen. And you kind of get to see Xingyan feel like she's falling back in love with Li Wei after the end of the first book. And I felt like the first book could have ended where it did, and like that also very well could have been a standalone. I'm very glad though for the second book, because I thought the second book was a masterpiece. Before we move on to discuss the rest of the Celestial Kingdoms duology, let's listen to a quick word about the brand sponsoring today's episode.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, let's continue the conversation. So the second book is a masterpiece. I quite literally started this 2 days ago, and I've just not been able to put it down. Every time I've read it, I've read so much of it in a sitting. It was so good. We get the return of Wenxia. We get like the resolve of the last book, right? Which was that, Xingyan gets the favor, gets a pardoning favor kind of from the emperor, and requests that her mother be freed from her sentence. And so we get to see Xingyan go home and see her mom, see the moon goddess, see the moon, see Pinga, see all these things. So when the second book starts and you're like, oh, who are these strangers and why are they letting strangers stay with them on the moon? I'm already sus of everybody, right? Like there's too much on the line here, I feel, to get to this, point of freedom for them to just be letting people in. And I understand there was like a desire to, not step on anybody else's toes, or, maybe somebody was sent from the Celestial Emperor, which turned out to be true, but not in the way that I'm trying to say right now, and so we get this introduction of our next threat, which is Wugong, who comes in and he's pretending to be someone he's not, and really he is the, general under the Celestial Empress, and I was fuming. I also felt like this part was perhaps a little bit too fast because I was like, I don't know any of these people yet. Things are moving a little too quickly for me at this point. But I think it did provide a good way to catapult into what was going to be happening in the rest of the book. We've got our new villain. We know that Wenxia has kept coming around and that Xingyan has been speaking to him and is not like trying to kill him, and he's not trying to kill her. So you start to feel that they're mending their relationship, even though it's been rather tumultuous the last little bit. But you also know that Li Wei is actively visiting the moon, and you know that he intends, at least in his mind, right, to marry Xingyan. And it's hard because, I want her to be happy, and I do happen to like both of her boys. I think they would be okay. And I think it's really hard because she didn't even necessarily want either of them, is at least what she tells herself. Like, she feels like she wants Li Wei. And she knows she's mad at Wenxia, but there's something inside her that's also like, I would be okay without either of them. Which I think we're not seeing this as much lately, or maybe we are in newer fantasy where, the female main character's okay on her own. She doesn't need some man necessarily. So I was really content with the fact that we could just keep going, like, bouncing back and forth between the boys and see what happens, if anything. So moving into talking about, I'm going to kind of like skip until at least halfway through the book, but when all the shit starts hitting the fan, right? Like, Xingyan kind of pairs up with the Empress to help Li Wei. And there's this whole, like, oh, there's an elixir, and Tao's gonna help get the elixir, and that was before, and now she's mad, and so she's like, okay, I want Tao too, And there's the reveal that the girl, I cannot remember her name, but Tao's friend, ? Is actually Li Wei's half-sister, which was crazy, because she was mentioned, albeit briefly, in the first book, in, like, the photos he had, like, painted of her when they were children. And so we get this like idea that, oh, there is an elixir. Xingyan is given the elixir and she's able to give it to her father. And then she's able to bring her father to meet her mother while they're in the ocean prison. I cannot remember where they were, but they were in like a sea prison. And there's this moment of even like Jingyan knowing I'm going to give my parents some time. Like they need time to, you know, it's been 50 years and they get this reconciliation that I think is so special because, again, in a lot of fantasy novels lately, there's always the like at least one parent is dead trope. And I know that that was a trope for the whole like first book, but he's alive. And so I really liked that we got to see, like, there is no mystery about who her family is and why she is the way she is, because she is the daughter of the moon goddess and the sun warrior, right? She is, one, a badass, but she knows who she is from the beginning. It's not a mystery. And she now gets to see, she gets, like, a semblance of real life, like what life would have been like had their lives not been touched with tragedy at such a young age. So it's kind of like a second chance, and I really appreciated that because we don't see that often, I feel, in these fantasy novels these days. So we know that Wugong shows up with his new army that is reminiscent of like the stone soldiers, which I always was fascinated with. I don't know why I said fascinated like that. I was always fascinated with that when I was a kid watching like the Discovery Channel. I was also a huge National Geographic girly growing up, like literally had probably over 200 copies, and I had like a National Geographic wall in my room. Anyway, so I was like, oh, that's a really cool call, especially because Wugong's like, oh, yeah, this is a thing that happens in the mortal, like a mortal king constructed these stone warriors to like defend him in his tomb and things like that. And so that's where he kind of stole that inspiration from to create these. I mean, I know they're not stone, they're from the dead, but to create these soldiers that have no feeling, that are void of emotion, like stone, essentially, which I thought was a cool, cool way to incorporate some history in there. And we see this, obviously we see whatever the young prince's name was die, which was really sad. We see the dragons come back and we get to see her dad have this moment with the dragons where they're like, oh shit, it's the sun warrior, you know, you saved us, you're still good in our books, you know, if you call we will come, kind of vibes, which I thought was really cool. And we see like, okay, there's a lot on the line here. Now we know, you know, Wugong's not fucking around. He's here to hurt people. And he, even after his death, will be reaping, you know, destruction on everyone. So there's a lot on the line. And then also at the same time, because it's a romance as well, we have this emotional, like, war going on in Jingyan's own heart, you know? She's like, am I leaning towards Li Wei? I think I am, and I don't know. But then also every single day, Wenxia is getting closer and closer to, you know, bringing himself back into her heart with open arms, even though she's very much thinking that her arms are not at all open and that they are, in fact, crossed, which I think is very cute. I love groveling. And I think that Wenxia had, like, the perfect amount of groveling and, like, vowing to her things and things like that to regain her trust throughout the book, which I really loved. I thought that was a nice touch. And I think it becomes obvious to the reader that she does, you know, she loves the boys and she claims that she loves them both equally, but you can see that she has a special kind of bias towards Wenxia. And I think that that makes the love that the reader is able to have for him, you know, like, return easier, because obviously I was really mad when he betrayed her in the first book. So I felt like not only was he groveling to her, he was groveling to me, which, you know, is, that's how it should work. The girls gotta agree, okay? But I was really like, okay, I'm letting him back in. I like him again. You know, I can love him again. I can appreciate the things he's saying. And I believe him, I think, was also at the top of that, is that, you know, Li Wei obviously didn't. He was kind of under the assumption that Wenshuk would do something again to betray everyone. And I think that that's even maybe part of the reason why I believed Wenshuk more, because I think it was becoming almost a defense thing for Li Wei to just keep falling back on the fact that he could blame Wenshuk for things. But anyways, I digress. But so moving forward, I think I just finished the book a few moments ago before I hit record because I wanted it to be fresh in my mind. And I think we need to start talking about like the last 100 pages, because Xinyan deciding to basically sacrifice herself by making herself, like, disguise herself as her mom, because that's who Wugang needed for the laurel tree, needed her tears for the laurel tree. I was in so much, like, awe of her, because obviously we know she's gonna do something like this, like, she's gonna have her big hero moment, but she was fully ready to be a martyr. And I loved that, you know, she asked her dad, despite not knowing him that well, but she, in her last, like, few moments before leaving, she asked her dad, like, on the day that you fought the sunbirds, did you feel something like this? And he was like, it was either the sunbirds or it was the whole rest of the world and you and your mother. And, you know, I had to make that decision, and I did. And so I think this really solidifies Xinyan's resolve. And I think it was really, I don't know, it was really, like, touching, I think, also. And such a, I wanted to mention this specifically, but when she does get the enchantment placed on her by Wenshuk to look like her mom, we see this transition in her character for the rest of the book, not just while she's enchanted, of, like, really coming full circle to understand her mother more. Like, literally stepping into her shoes and walking a mile in them, which I thought was such a good narrative device. Like, I know it was a part in the plot that happened, but I also thought, like, you can see the rest of her understanding her mother more go throughout the book, because in the moment where she's tied to the laurel tree by Wugang, right, she is both embodying her mother and her father, because she's like, okay, she, you know, the myths of the sun warrior is that he died fighting the sunbirds, and that was, you know, the risk he took, and that's what happened, even though he didn't die. But so we're seeing, like, she's ready to be the martyr to save everyone, the same way that her dad supposedly was. But she's also her mother in the sense that she is her, you know, in her mother's disguise at that moment. But also that, you know, her tears that are wept onto the tree are what make the laurel seeds come out. So there was such a, I don't know, it was such a beautiful moment to have her, like, both sides of the coin be shown together, especially because you see why each book is named each thing, because, yeah, she does embody both of her parents. Anyway, so that feather thing coming and burning through her blood when Wugang strikes her, and she realizes, okay, if I'm tied to this tree, I guess I go down with the tree, you know, it's gonna catch on fire, and I go down with the tree. And, you know, they say fire is cleansing, especially as a thematic device in books, and I think that that was, you know, it was her being reborn. We didn't know that. We think she's about to die, of course. And so it was also so lovely to watch, so lovely to watch, but it was really lovely to watch her dad show up with the jade dragon bow and kill Wugang. And there's this moment where you're like, weird, they were all too late anyways. And Wench is there and he's weak and he's on his knees with her. And he's saying he never severed his part of the enchantment. Like, all that time he was sending his life force into her body to save her as she burned, and in doing so, it was like all of the warnings that everybody heeds throughout the whole book, right, is to not give too much of your life force away and weaken yourself enough that you will die. And it's kind of like what everyone says to everyone else to save when they're trying to save someone. And so there's this moment where you're like, where you and Xinyan are both like, oh my god, he, you know, used his whole life force, weakened himself to the brink of death for her. And she realizes she loves him, one. And two, she's like, all this time I've spent, you know, denying that he was being truthful. He was being truthful. He truly would do anything for me, including die. And so you think she's going to die as well. And by the fact that everyone thinks she's going to die, her mother's crying. And her mother cries on the laurel tree, which is what ends up saving her in one last bout. And she doesn't know at the time that Wench's, like, essence. I was a little confused by this, but Wench's essence or whatever is also technically preserved by the laurel tree, and she doesn't know that, but eventually Li Wei does. And we see Wench die, and we see Xingyan live, and there's part of you that's like, is this how her decision is made then, like, between the boys? Like, by default, she's going to be with Li Wei, which I think would have been unfair. So I was so proud of her when she tells Li Wei that she can't, she's not meant to be the new Celestial Empress, who also died during the battle in the war. She's not cut out for this life. This wasn't what she wants. He can't leave his position as the now Celestial Emperor to, you know, go fuck around the world with her as he used to promise when he was a kid. He's got duties, which is heartbreaking, but it's also like we all saw that coming. And so for them to actually have to live it, and for it to not be unrealistic in that sense, where like, oh, what if he abdicates the throne? Things like this, like that would normally happen. That was not in the cards for them. They fought so hard for this peace, and they realized that though they love each other, it's, you know, they want different things, which is so real of them to come to that realization, and to act on it. And then to learn that Xingyan goes to the cloud wall, like near the demon realm, every day, and it's there that she can smell and feel Wench's presence. Like, that's so painful because it's a callback to her mom. You know, how her mom, once she was freed from having to stay imprisoned on the moon and learned of her husband's death, quote unquote, she would go to his grave every day in the mortal realm and come back up later. So it was such a full circle moment, where, as I was saying before about, you know, when Xingyan takes on the form of her mother, it's then where she starts to really interpret her mother's, you know, personality and like things that her mother went through as her own story. Which I thought was really beautiful, and it was really heartbreaking. And I cried, of course, because I cry at everything marginally sad in a book that makes me feel things. And so when we learned that his essence is like gone, which was kind of confusing to me, but I digress. Xingyan can no longer feel when she's like energy there anymore. And so she returns to the emperor, who is now Li Wei, and she, you know, is like, what the fuck happened, essentially. And they reveal that like sometimes the Celestial Emperor can decide to send somebody back to the mortal realm to start a secondary life with no memories of his immortal life. And so it's like a true second chance, which I was bawling, because how sweet of Li Wei, despite everything, despite, you know, not winning the girl in that sense, knows that if Wencha is what's going to make her happy, then he will do anything to make her happy still, even if it's not with him. Which, pain straight to my heart. You gotta love Li Wei. He's so lovable. Just for me, he wasn't who my heart ached for. And so we get to see at the end Xingyan go down to the mortal realm and meet Wencha as a mortal, and he doesn't know who she is, but he can feel that he has met her before, which I love that trope. I know perhaps it's not for everyone, but I love the, like, my soul would know your soul in any form, in any world, under any circumstances, without a doubt. And I just fucking, I'm nom 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 nom, eat that shit up, dude. Oh my god, I was living for it. And I was also so also in awe of Jingyun again for when, you know, she has the opportunity to ask Li Wei for anything, he says. And she's like, okay, well, I want the elixir. And then she thinks for a minute and she's like, I want to. And I, you know, give the first one to your sister because she needs it for her husband. And I just thought that was so honorable, which I think was, you know, a testament to Jingyun's character throughout the entirety of both books. She fights honorably. She acts honorably. She prefers not to lie when she can. You know, she's got a good conscience on her shoulders. And I think that it really shone through, especially at the end. It was like that full circle moment for us. And I was both relieved and sad about it because obviously you want her to give it to Wensha now. So I kind of like that we got that really open-ended ending where they're like, oh, we're going to meet for drinks. And you don't know what happens. You don't know if he ever gets the elixir. You don't know, you know, you don't know anything. So I really liked the let's leave everything up to chance. Like, we are closing the door here. This was just such a beautiful duology. So wonderful. I fucking loved it. I think I wrote in my notes perhaps a song. Let's go check. Oh, obviously, I'm a fucking idiot. Obviously, I always pick a Taylor Swift song when there's a song that reminds me of the books. And I know if you've listened this far and you've read the books, you know what I'm going to say. But The Archer by Taylor Swift. And not even for the fact, obviously, that Jingyun was an archer herself. But for the fact that, you know, everything that that song embodies also embodies Jingyun's story, I feel. I feel like there were so many good lines in both books, but I think in the second book was just so good. And I know obviously it's because I just finished it, so I'm feeling like this. But I loved, you know, let's see, before I start trying to paraphrase things. I no longer counted the times I returned to the cloud wall border. It had become a ritual without which I felt lost. This place I had once despised was now the only balm to my grief, though not without pain of its own. To sense a wisp of Wench's spirit forever beyond my reach. Perhaps I was being cruel to myself. It would be a kindness to forget, but I would not let his memory fade. And I was just like, yeah, I'm there with you, girly. I'm there with you. This was just a masterpiece. I loved them both. I think that, you know, I know it's so controversial to say that something deserves an adaptation on the screen, but I could see this being adapted and being like, if it was done well, I could see this being a really good adaptation on screen because I would have loved to see just the way it was such an aesthetically described book. So I would like to see that on the screen, and perhaps that's an unpopular opinion, but if it was done correctly, I'm in. I think I'm gonna rate, obviously I've been raving about this the whole time, so this is solid 5 for me. I was in the mood for something like this. It is so beautiful. The covers are just fucking stunning, which pick them up from their covers and then to also have it be stunning on the inside is a relief, but a rare one at that. So yeah, I guess that's really all I have to say about this. I think that's where I'm going to leave it for this episode. Before we part, we'd just like to thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to leave a review on whichever platform you're listening on, if applicable. If you have any further questions regarding topics discussed throughout the episode, feel free to join our Hardcover Host Discord server via the link in the show notes or send us an email, hardcoverhostpod@gmail.com. Feel free to recommend books to cover in future episodes as well. As always, I am Sam Cabrera-Dixon, and this has been an episode of Hardcover Hoes. If you enjoyed this listening experience and you'd like to follow along with us next time, the next book on our to-be-read list is Yolk by Mary H.K. Choi. Until we meet again, enjoy your reading.